Welcome to the Recovery Stories Podcast, bringing you stories of hope, healing, and triumph over the bondage of addictions, mental health struggles, trauma, and dysfunctional family systems. Our courageous storytellers have chosen to live their journey out loud in order to show others that they don't have to suffer in silence. The stories you will hear are raw, real, and may involve graphic and triggering content. This podcast is brought to you by Promises Behavioral Health's Rooted Alumni Community. If you or a loved one are struggling, have questions, or are ready to take the next step, call our admission center at 888-648-4098 or visit us online at www.promisesbehavioralhealth.com. Our team is ready and waiting to answer the call for help.
Welcome to this episode of Rooted Recovery Stories. My name is Patrick Custer, and I'm your host. So glad each and every one of you have tuned in with us today. I'm really excited about the guest that we have joining us, Grammy-nominated and Dove Award-winning country recording artist Ty Herndon. Welcome to the show.
Hey, man. Hi, friend.
Hi.
How are you?
So happy that, I'm good. So happy we're finally getting to do this.
I know. We've had a few obstacles that were, I guess, meant to be, because here we are.
That's right. Man, and what a way that we get to look at recovery these days, right?
I wear it like I'm nominated for 9 Grammys and I'm going to the Grammy Awards. So there you go. Wear it with pride.
Love it. Well, before we got to Grammys, I want to take it all the way back to Little Ty and where you're from. Tell us a little bit about back in the day and your early life.
Little Pentecostal Ty.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, I was. My mom said I kind of when you smack a baby on the bottom. I didn't cry. I just started singing. So. I don't even know what that means, but anyhow, I think I was singing before I was talking.
Wow.
And I was just a little awkward, dyslexic, ADHD, that's what I say, ADHD Tyrone. That's my name, Tyrone. Wesley Boyd Tyrone Herndon III. It's not all that. It's Boyd Tyrone Herndon. My sister added those sometime back. I don't know why, because she just said, "Why did they name you Wesley after Grandpa?" I said, "I don't know." She goes, "We're going to call you Wesley Boyd Tyrone Herndon III," and it's kind of awesome. Stuck. It's so crazy, but I was touring around churches and tabernacles and tent revivals and camp meetings. And for those of you who don't really know what that means, it just in the South and in other, and not just in the South, but it's a very religious, I want to say tribe. I think I'll call it that. It's a very religious tribe of people that travel around the country and just do tent revivals. And I was called to preach at like 10 years old. And just a very amazingly beautiful upbringing. My mom and dad were great. My grandparents were great. My grandmother had her own radio show for years on WPRN in Butler, Alabama. And I remember my mom and her sister standing around an AM microphone like the Grand Ole Opry and singing. And just there was a lot of music always growing up in my house. And when I say, I'll take it back to the tribe, because my grandfather, he had 4 daughters. And he never wanted them to move off the property. So every time a daughter would get married, he would buy them a house on wheels. He'd buy them a trailer. And
wow,
we had a little trailer park going on behind the farmhouse.
Yeah.
And all of his grandkids kind of grew up being really close. And my grandpa had a county country store out by the road. I mean, this is movie stuff.
Yeah.
And then every year the carnival would come across the highway into the cow pasture. So, I just had a very, almost Fried Green Tomatoes. If you remember that movie upbringing, it was just, it was super cool, but
it sounds fun.
It was fun, but I had a little secret and, I just was this very outgoing kid. I mean, I was just on fire for so many things. And around 10, 11 years old, I remember a hellfire and brimstone traveling evangelist speaking on the sins of homosexuals. And, and I didn't really know what that word meant.
I was going to ask if you knew, if that had ever been, if you'd ever been educated on what that meant before that point.
I had not. It's interesting after all this, because we've done a lot, I've done a lot of work in EMDR and counseling and stuff over the years, because there's just a monumental things that have happened in my life that ended up being tar and feather in my soul, that needed to be cleaned and unraveled. And went all the way back to that 10-year-old preacher kid who was, I didn't know what the word meant, but I knew it wasn't good. And I knew that this guy kept looking at me and just, you know, preaching at me and just pointing at me. I was sitting on the front row and I just became smaller and smaller and smaller. And, you know, my aunt, who is just like, you know, my mom's sisters are like, the last one just passed away. They were just, you know, they all died within 5 years. My mom is still here. She's 81. But you can do a lot of things, but don't mess with the kids, no matter what the subject is. And I just remember my aunt just pulling that preacher out behind the tent. We never saw him again, but she never told
me. Did they know?
You know, I don't think that. I mean, years later they did, of course.
Right.
Because I'm very much a God guy. You know, it's been in me from day one, and as a sponsor and working in the program, you know, it's always, you know, I always just like to say, you know. It's a feeling. It's something that's bigger than you are. It's Buddha. It's the grass. It can be the grass to start out with, but I still walk out every morning and put my feet in the grass. It's a weird thing. Even if there's snow on the ground, I just kind of connect.
There is something about grounding, right?
Something about grounding. Absolutely.
Yeah.
But man, I in that moment I became very damaged. It was like an evil blanket just kind of went over me, and I went from this amazingly vibrant kid to not even wanting to sing anymore. Definitely not wanting to talk about God, not wanting to talk about even school. It changed me even in school.
Wow.
And my mom was like, what's going on with this kid? You know, and eventually I started singing a little bit more, but it was never the same. And because that first layer of tar had been laid, and I had no idea that it would stay with me through, you know, treatment centers and trying to get sober and just trying to be happy and through marriages, through relationships and, you know, all the way up through, I'm going to move really quickly here. We'll go back. We'll circle back, but all the way up through this thing we call COVID that blanketed us, especially the music industry, shut us down. And I don't thank God for the death, and I don't thank God for the hardships that people have gone through. But in my program, I praise God for the actual miracle of still being here. We'll get into that a little bit. But and coming out of that and actually getting to be that preacher teacher and having all of this trauma and stuff that's happened to me over the years just removed but remembered, and being able to take that and that information and that healing and depart it into others and talk about my story, which is about to happen. You know, you and I, we've been friends for a minute, and the whole miracle of all this for me is that, wait a minute, I'm about to release my 19th studio album, original album. And the very idea that I am putting my actual scars and pain and all the real stuff is taking center stage. I'm terrified and I cannot wait at the same time. So it's been quite the journey.
When you talk about scars and pain, first of all, are you able to share with us what the name of the album is?
I am. The album's called Jacob. I work with a lot of folks in treatment, and my sponsor, we were sitting around talking with my spiritual advisor one day, who's a cool dude. We kept calling him Pastor Clint. He's in Houston, Texas, but you know, one of those really outspoken, great, I love everybody kind of pastors. You know, all are welcome. You know, never love the sin, hate the sin. You know, love the sin. Yeah. That's what, love the sinner, hate the sin. But we're sitting around talking. He goes, man, you remind me of a story in the Bible, your whole story. And I said, what's that? He goes, the story of Jacob. I said, I'm very familiar with the story of Jacob. You know, God, he wrestles with God, and you know, God, it was Israel, and God changed his name to Jacob. And he, you know, the crutch that he carried the rest of his life became his greatest scar, became his greatest moment, and his greatest healing device to help others. And I thought, I said, wow, Pastor Clint, I said, let me think about that for a second. And, cause we had just really done a lot of work. We covered a lot of ground. And I just, you know, my sponsor says, you know, listen to the whisper, follow the breadcrumb. And, I just like this little light bulb.
That's a good nugget. I've never heard that before. And,
I use it a lot. Believe me, I do. I said, Pastor Clint, I think you just named my next record, because I was in a place. I'm like, I've done all this great stuff. And, you know, I always say I've never been to the top of Mount Everest, but I've landed on some pretty good caves, some pretty good explorations of music within myself. And, I just didn't really want to do it anymore. I had kind of lost my desire to even want to write music. And with one idea, just one little idea, it's like it had purpose. And that's all that was missing, because I was learning to live in joy and receive a lot of new things into this house, this bricks and mortar that makes up me. And, you know, kind of had to tear the old house down and keep some of the good boards and start rebuilding. And my sponsor, I pulled this out, but I'll go back to the record in a minute, but he gave me this, this, it's what you make bricks in. This is so actually my recovery friend, Jeremy Kircher, gave me this. And I actually, it was a great gift, because, the town that I'm building now, I'm not just building a house. I'm building a town. I'm building the town of Boyd Tyrone Herndon. And it's even got a jail in it. So a little time out. But what goes into this brick mason is I'm really, really careful what I put in it and the information that goes into it. Because I know that I'm not just building a town for myself. I'm going to have a lot of visitors in my town. And it's been incredible to work with some amazing sober coaches. And I like to say, you have to forgive me. You know, I get really excited about this stuff. I am a bit ADHD, and I'll jump all over the place on you. So
that's okay.
But this last 14 months has been probably some of the best sobriety that I have encountered. And there's a huge story behind it that we're going to tell with the release of this music. But the album is called Jacob. There's no song on the album called Jacob. It's just a concept record about changing your ending. That we're all capable of having our own healing moment. And that's the true miracle of all of this. We're talking recovery. It's finally coming home to believing that you can do it, number one, and recognizing that certain parts of you, your blood and bones, are going to always be with you, and how to love the broken pieces and how to heal the broken pieces and let them live with you. And I'm just learning so much about loving myself. And I think we all think, for a guy that, and mom calls right in the middle of that. Mom's, hi mom, I'm going to put you over here on the bed. We'll talk to you a little bit later. She's going to be so mad at me. We'd be here all night if I answered that, y'all.
Let's hope she'll understand.
She will. She will. She absolutely will. But Changing Your Ending, an album that's called Jacob. And I think we all have miracles that live in us. We just don't know it.
And you know, I wanted to interject there, because just talking about this really gets me fired up. The other week when we had lunch, man, there's something, you know, when somebody shares something with you that just gets you really, I mean, especially for those of you who don't know, Ty and I both share a similar Pentecostal background. And so like when I get something, I get like stirred up inside and I get on fire and very passionate about it. And talking about this is one of the things that really it's contagious because, you know, recovery helped me both because of the issue, my own issues surrounding sexuality, but as well as my addiction. The recovery process helped me reframe what I needed to with a higher power, but also, and here on this earthly world, helped me reframe what healing looked like, what Patrick being okay looked like, what my relationship with a higher power looked like. And just like you were referencing that pastor that came to your camp meeting, it helped me get outside of the box that other people, outside of the brick and mortar buildings that other people had built. I was able to stop living in those. And like you said, in that beautifully put metaphor, start creating my own town.
Yeah.
And what you're doing and what you're talking about, you know, whether you're talking about the, you know, changing the narrative of the story or using the metaphor of a town, at the end of the day, what we're referring to is if you still got a heartbeat and you are not cemented into the ending that you have been told or what you think it is, there is always room for a different ending.
Yes.
And changing your story. And so like that, I just wanted to say that because this is one of the coolest parts of your story that I'm so excited to talk about, because you're doing exactly what I think that we're meant to do is, you know, just take, like what you said, take what Jacob, the story of Jacob, and you know, our darkest past, our crutch, our trauma, use it to change the lives of others.
Yeah. I don't think I ever even paid any attention to the word trauma. I thought it was something that they had in the hospital. You know, I'd never really paid that much attention to codependency. Mm-hmm. I went to an incredible treatment center out in Houston, Texas, J. Flowers Institute. And I'll always scream their praises. And, you know, I also had some great recovery here in Tennessee, with Cumberland Heights, Promises, you know, so many amazing places to change your ending and tell your story a different way. But the greatest thing that happened with me when I started my journey in Houston to be better in recovery, to be a sober companion, to do some really cool things, is I got to understand my disease. I never liked calling it that, but
why not?
None of us do, right?
Yeah, no, but why? But for you specifically, have you identified why you didn't like calling it a disease?
Simple, because I didn't understand it. I didn't know what my disease was. Okay, yeah, I'm an alcoholic drug addict, but finding out, doing things like brain mapping and finding out at in my 50s that I was manic, bipolar, depressive. I mean, it's like, how did I miss that? I've been so entitled out on a tour bus this whole time is, you know, the first thing you would do is blame somebody else. It's, why did nobody notice this? You know, and being, I knew I was dyslexic as a kid, and I knew that because I learned to read with rhythm. And I just recently got to do the coolest project for Windsor Learning, a kid's book around dyslexia that's coming this summer.
Awesome.
It's based around this little cowboy who learned how to read singing to the farm animals. So that was me. And it was just one of the promises. I want to, at some point in this interview, I want to talk about the promises because
you
know, they are so real. The disease, man, I guess probably I've heard some of my sponsors say that just feels dirty. I'm like, well, you think anybody with a disease wants to say it feels great? No, the word disease is, if you're denying, it's kind of a part of your denial that there's a problem. And it was for me anyway. And now it's like, I can tell you I know my road to relapse. I know my road to recovery. I know so much more about this armor and this that I wear. I like to actually change it from my armor to my sheriff's badge. I wear my sheriff badge as my recovery in my town. That I, you know,
that yeah.
If you don't belong here, you know, I'm gonna run you out of my town.
But yeah, yeah.
I'm gonna love you always, but my disease. I understand. I understand it, and it it doesn't have a seat at the table anymore. Actually, it's on the outskirts of town, and I have to keep it there because guess what, folks? It's not going away.
It's alive,
it's,
right?
It's alive. Yep. It's, you know, but don't cross my county line, disease. You know, but I know what I can do. I know that I can create easily cracks in the foundation, cracks in the windows that it can get in.
Yeah.
So I think awareness, and that's why I, you know, even to this day, you know, it was tough doing, I think a lot of us out there that are in recovery, it was kind of tough doing the meetings online. It was also convenient, you know, you coffee and t-shirt and in your underwear, you could do meetings, you know, at least I hope you had underwear. I found out something really important that I didn't know about myself. I really found out a lot of information about codependency. I found out that I had no idea how to be alone. I found out that I was a chameleon when it came to relationships. It's kind of like the, what's the movie with Julia Roberts, Runaway Bride. She had no idea what kind of ex she liked. I morphed everything into my life, except my music, except the gift. That always was very identifiable at me. And, but as my life was spinning in a tornado of, I don't know who I am, because all of that muck that had settled, that was like cement, had to deal with it finally. And so, I wish I could go, we'll talk again. I wish I could go into some of the stories about the songs on this album where I am dealing with trauma that some of it, it wasn't my choice that I couldn't talk about. And
yeah,
other was my choice.
Sure. And, but this is your first music that you're putting out about these issues of your sexuality and recovery, right? And so I hope it's okay that I said both of those.
It is. Absolutely.
Okay, great.
Yeah, absolutely.
I know it, there's some to be revealed. So
just the stories behind the songs.
Yeah. So. Yeah. But how pivotal of a moment for you to, you know, because we look at, you know, again, this is something we were talking about the other week. We're in a day and age where it's acceptable and appropriate for artists to be fully vulnerable about all the ick in their lives.
Yeah.
Or like, you know, the true story, and people are actually applauding that, where that wasn't always necessarily the case. And
absolutely.
You know, some of it was okay, but not anything. Yeah. And so how does that, I mean, that's gotta feel amazing to have been able to put that pen to paper and finally be releasing your heart.
Oh my gosh, man. I wake up every morning with so much joy. And this being able to have the freedom to have a career now. And the promises for me are so all over the place because, some of my wildest dreams are coming true right now.
Yeah.
And where I used to be terrified of them. When I said earlier, I'm terrified and excited at the same time. I recognize the terror of it because I used to live it all the time. I don't feel it. I recognize it. The healthy part of that gets to stay in town. The rest of it has to stay on the outskirts.
Yeah.
But I am so excited about, music, publishing, writing, film, books, made for TV stuff, just all this stuff that keeps coming to life because of my story.
Yeah.
And something that I wanted to hide from people my whole life. Mm-hmm. And the very idea that I can be so open about these scars and and that they have become the miracle in my life and not the murderer has blown me away in such a fantastic way. My mom said the other day, she goes, "You sure do talk a lot." I said, that's a lot for my mom, because I've always been a little bit laid back and not so many words, but you break up all that cement and that tar and that muck and that junk, you got a lot to say. But through the help of some really wonderful counselors and some really cool folks in recovery, I got too many words. So I'm actually going, I'm just going to tell you guys a little secret. I'm going for a 2-week media training class. And so they're going to try to harness my words a little bit. So I'm like, good luck with that.
Oh, wow.
I'm going to have to put a rodeo in my town now. What you talking
two
about?
2 weeks. That's a long time. Good luck with that. Man, that's impressive. But
I don't know.
Hey, because I interview people so regularly, and I from this side of things, I can tell you, I would rather have somebody that has too many words than somebody who's doesn't have enough, and I've got to pull them out, you know? And so
I've been told that I've done media training before, but here's the difference. So I went through some crap back, in the 90s, and I had some crisis media training just to learn not to say the wrong thing. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of cool that I'm going to get to go learn how to say all the right things, and keep them all bundled in the right, I guess, the right direction. So, So nobody's harnessing my words. They're just kind of helping me. Because the story that I'm about to tell, and you and I will visit again when this record is out, because there's so much I want to say right now, and there's so much we are saying, but I have really been shut down for a long time, and I didn't even know it, I got home from doing a lot of work, trauma work in Houston. And like 5 months of it. And I got home and I was like, okay. Number one, I was completely fine to kind of hang out by myself, which was, there's always a house full of people here in my house. It's like, I'm just by myself, So I called one of my doctors, Dr. Somerville. And I said, you guys, I'm having a little problem here. I said, we got all this gunk out, and we did a little whitewash and, God moved in and all the good things. I said, but I have no idea how to live in joy. I'm like, you guys didn't teach me that. Wait a minute. What's this? Where am I? A friend's pain and misery. These guys have been with me a long time. Where are they?
Yeah.
And I missed them. And I've learned now with some of the things that I'm doing with sponsoring, it's like, and even in the sober coaching arena that's down the road, that was a real thing. And I learned that real quickly, that joy is also a huge emotion. And
absolutely.
It feels like a
completely new emotion for many of us once we finally actualize our full healing, right?
It sounds so crazy to say that. What do you mean you don't have to live with joy? It's like, I had no idea. I mean, maybe a little Christmas memory here or there,
right?
But real,
if you were to ask,
contentment, joy in your foundation, peace, love, spirituality, God, all those things that were not foreign to me, they just didn't, it's like they lived around me, but not in me. And having all that move in was something else. I mean,
that's awesome.
Yeah, Pentecostal moment, Holy Spirit.
Yeah, heck yeah.
The words that I used to be afraid to say, but I'm not anymore.
So can we rewind just a little bit and go back to because two things that are consistent themes in your story. We've already addressed in your early years, when you started to get messages about yourself because of, at an early age, because of your sexuality and things. But codependency and addiction, right? So when did both of those things pop up for you? Did codependency, was that something that you learned from, you know, that was that you were mirroring as a coping skill, or did it just develop for you? And do you know, have you identified that?
Yeah, I think when I realized at about age 10 and a half, 11, what gay was, that I wanted to do anything and everything to make you like me. Because if you found out my secret, that's a tough thing for a kid to realize. And especially at that young age, it's like, oh, wow, I'm broken. And what my message was, you're never getting to heaven. You're broken. You're a sinner. You're going to burn in a lake of fire. No matter, there's nothing you can do to be good enough to be in God's graces. And for coming from a very religious family, now that messaging was not coming from my family, you know.
Yeah.
My family is all about love. And I just, in that moment, started on a journey to change it. Because I'm this little redneck kid from Alabama. So, you know, I all of a sudden I'm more interested in four-wheelers than I am singing. All of a sudden I'm out wanting to learn how to work on cars with my dad, you know. And my dad's like, what are you doing, man? Aren't you going to go do some music? He's like, okay, well, come on, let's learn how to do. So my dad was patient. Right down, I think I told you this story, right down to, okay, let's go hunting, man. We're going to, you know, at like 12 and 13 years old, you know, and then I'm in a deer stand down in South Alabama with my dad and my cousins. And, you know, here comes this buck running right up towards the deer stand. I could have been killed because I jumped down out of the deer stand, ran at the deer like, get out of here, they're going to kill you. My dad was like, we better take him back to singing real quick. Like, just like, wasn't working, man. So,
oh, man.
But I started on this journey just to be like everybody else because, you know, I didn't want to be different.
Right.
And who does? And, but what I tell kids today is that your different is beautiful. And I wish that I had someone to tell me that. Your different is glorious. You're lucky to be different. And it can be your greatest moment in your life. And to have, and my parents did that. They just didn't really know how to do it. You know, they were affirming in so many ways. And it was all around music for me. But no one ever knew that I didn't want to be a gay kid. I didn't want to be a gay teenager. I didn't want to be a gay man. And I didn't know how to be. Because when you don't want to be, you don't really work towards anything that's going to make that better. So,
right.
And then there was, you know, I can't get into it right now, but there was some abuse that happened earlier on. And then in my teens, some really horrible things that happened. And then in my early 30s, you know, another awful pounding thing. It was just layers and layers were building up. And it was, you know, I started using drugs and alcohol in my early 30s. To cover up those things, and as more drugs and alcohol, you're just building. It's layers. So I became this huge tree in the forest that had all these rotten layers. So I was eventually going to fall, and I did more than once. And
would you say that you wanted? Because I feel like I know the answer to this, but did you want sobriety back then before? Because relapse, obviously, you know, is a part of your story and most people's stories. I would say it's more common to have relapse in your story than not. But, you know, do you remember identifying when the first time you fully wanted recovery and sobriety and to stop using it as a coping tool?
I do. And it's really part of this story. I think it's kind of all come home to me in the last, during COVID, after COVID. Mm-hmm. I've been many years of sobriety, you know, I've also had some relapses and, I think being in the music business, and I'm not going to blame this on the music business, but being codependent, not knowing a thing about who I was and still hiding two marriages. You know, and I'm great. You know, I'm also great friends with both of those beautiful women who I say they were such teachers in my life. And two long-term relationships with men. And just to currently, you know, being great friends with both those guys. And then finally, kind of being the guy here in the last couple of years that they actually saw. I didn't see him, but I guess people saw something in me that I never saw in myself. And so it really embracing recovery was a gift that came from, if there could be a gift that came from COVID, because, you know, I can't really say the language that I'd like to say about that on here. Well, ever. But I am. To answer your question, I knew I've been to rehab and treatment centers a lot in my life, from 1 week stays to 1 month stays to longer. I just never understood my disease. Mm-hmm. I never knew why, and I never really had anyone explain it to me. Like so many counselors today, I don't think it was the counselor's fault back then either. They were just dealing maybe textbook.
We know a lot more now than we did back then. Yeah.
So I talked to I love a group here in Nashville. It's just an old timers group, Out to Lunch Bunch at 202. But they have the liar's table down in, I think you got to be a certain age to sit there. And those old timers, I said, you ain't told enough lies to sit at this table, boy. You know, and I said, you want to bet? So I think when you stop, I wrote a song one time that was on an album that got me a Grammy nomination. It was Lies I Told Myself, I'm Glad I Didn't Believe. And I have lied to myself so much over the years so it would fit whatever codependent story I was telling at the time. And I'm so lucky and blessed to be able to peel this onion back, you know, and we don't stop, guys. I just talked to a guy, a recovery dude, been sober 50 years. And this is where I got this from. And this was at the liar's table. He was telling the truth, though. He said, peeling back the layers never stops because we're still putting them on. And we are as good as one day of sobriety.
Ooh, that's good. Yeah.
And I love that because it goes back. That is textbook. You know, people say, I talk to myself. First thing, I'm my own sponsor and sponsee every morning when I get up and look in the mirror. You know, it's like, hey, look at you, man. 24 more hours. You get the gift of sobriety. Mm. So you got to think about that today. And, we may know in our spirit that we get it. We're going to be sober. We're rocking along. I think if we don't get up and look in the mirror and say, hey, thank God for this next 24 hours. Mm-hmm. Thank God that I have a few tools. My sponsor says I have a whole warehouse of them. I've just finally taken a look at them that I can go to in any situation and figure out what's going on. And I always say that the road to relapse is in a painting in my hall right out here. I know sometimes it's five things, sometimes it's 20, but I know I know if I'm getting on that dirt road, and I know what to do about it.
Yeah.
And I'm lucky. I always say it takes a team with me. I mean, I've got a sponsor, sure, two sober coaches that love to beat up on me. Make sure that I stay grounded. And my sponsor says, you know, the beautiful thing about this story right now is that you're getting to be just a little bit off the grid. You're getting to be, you're no better than anybody else. He goes, but you're getting to tell a story that's better. And you're getting to tell a story that is yours. And it's a tremendous gift to be able to just to stand there and take that in. Mm-hmm. And so I like to say, you know, today I get to be just a little bit off the grid. But I take my ass right back to the grid and go to a meeting, you know, and I know that somebody that's 2 hours sober is no better than me. I could be right there, but I do get to hug that person and go, it gets better. And, you know, so that's the real gift of this all for you guys like us, you know, it's a miracle. It really is. And
it is.
Oh man.
You know, speaking of miracles, you know, there are, miracles and gifts. You were talking earlier about the byproduct of the promises and how that's coming true in your life. The just kind of naturally wanted to lead into some of those things. And over the last, I guess, 2 years or whatever, starting off with, I love the song you did with Kristen Chenoweth, Orphans of God.
Yeah.
That's one of my favorite all-time songs. And absolutely. Yep. It's so beautiful.
Oh my gosh, man. Did you love you? It was originally recorded by Avalon.
Yeah, it was.
Hey, with our buddy Michael Passons, who you gotta have him on your show, man. On your blog. He's so wonderful to talk to. His story is amazing. Yeah. But this was supposed to be a Christmas song, by the way. We were gonna do a Christmas song. And I'll just tell you a quick story about this. It's pretty cute.
Yeah.
My buddy Paul Cardall, who's an incredible concert pianist. We were just going to do it. Just he and I was just going to be like a Jim Brickman thing. It was just going to be a cut on his John Tesh, you know, that just where they have a singer that does something.
Yeah.
And Kristen and I were hanging out, and I said, you know, would you do this with me? And I sang her part. It's pretty funny. I actually was like, oh, doing this whole soprano thing on her. I did her whole part, and just to show her what to say, she called me. She goes, why you need me? That was pretty.
I could also hear that in her Kristen voice, just saying that.
Yeah.
Right.
She's so cute. Wait, here. She's hanging on the wall right here. I love this. I loved this album cover.
That's awesome.
Yeah. I said, are you ashamed to have our whole faces on here? She goes, it's art, baby. It's art.
Yeah. Yeah.
She's so awesome. I adore Kristen and she killed it, man. She killed it. She came in, and this was during COVID, so I had to produce this like we're doing right now.
Wow.
She took her iPad into the vocal booth with her. And so I'm in the vocal booth with, you know, I'm an artist and I've done well, but it's, you know, I also understand that when it comes to music and Hollywood and acting and it's Kristen Chenoweth, you know, so I'm like, okay, what am I going to tell her she doesn't know, you know, and producing a record. And it was really fun because we both were teachers in that moment. She taught me something and I taught her something. And we carried that away from out of the studio and then back into friendship, you know. And I want to say this, and she and Josh, you know, just got engaged. They got engaged a few months back, and
that's awesome.
Played in my band, but they met at a wedding in Oklahoma. He was playing at her nephew's wedding, and they got engaged, and they're gonna be living here in Nashville a little bit. So y'all see Kristen Chenoweth at Starbucks, just like you see Nicole Kidman. Y'all make sure to say hi to her. She's real friendly.
Yeah. Awesome. I'm excited to hear that. I love Kristen. Everything about her. So, you know, that's a really cool story. Thanks for sharing that. But so I wanted to open up with the now, the miracle, what's going on in your life. But there's so many things you opened up about the book. You know, you started a foundation. Tell us a little bit about that and how it came to be, what it is.
Man, I think somebody asked me the other day, they said, do you think that, you know, people are going to have to come out anymore? I said, I don't know that we're in that place anymore. I don't know that it's a huge announcement for people anymore. I said, I might have been the last of the great comer outers. I don't know. It was, you know, started out with me, then Billy Gilman came out at the same time. And so it was a big story. But for me, it was just about wanting to do bigger things within the LGBTQ community. I was clearly out to my family and most of the industry, but the fans, you know, the fans deserved to know what was going on with me. And I got really tired of hiding it. And being sober, it just like, it didn't fit in my blood and bones anymore. And so actually my partner at the time, Matt Cullum, you know, we're still great friends. We a really lovely long-term relationship, and, you know, he just lives right up the street. And, It's funny how he shows up here at dinner time. So like, you don't live here anymore. I'm just kidding. No, I'm not kidding. But he took that journey with me. He came out to his work and some of his family as well.
Wow.
And, you know, took him on his first red carpet, and I thought he'd be nervous, but you know, he walked around the corner with 1,000 flash bulbs. It was just like, hey, how y'all doing? We had the most magical time over the next few years doing a lot of cool things, being out in country music and getting to have a voice there, which we have quite a number of people in Nashville now that are in country music. We have out country artists that are on the charts. We have out country artists who are producing records, who are writing records. And I like to say this, man, and I love that guy. Thanks for that thunder right there.
Right. We must not be far from each other because that thunder hit right at the same time.
It did, right? Boom.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like, why are we sitting down at your house? It's like, we're more official this way.
Yeah.
I started the Foundation for Love and Acceptance because I wanted to do something in music as an out gay man that mattered. I had been working with the Trevor Project with HRC, Human Rights.
Yeah.
I'd been working with so many organizations already that I wanted to do something that was our brand, our company's brand. And so we started our first Concert for Love and Acceptance. We had probably 20 artists, and we had a video from Reba. We had all this cool stuff, and
it's
hugely successful. Next year, we went to the Wild Horse, hugely successful. Year three, hugely successful. 4 or 5. We had partnered with CMT and GLAAD. GLAAD's still our partner. Actually, GLAAD's vice president left GLAAD. He's now my manager. And we have a production company
together. Very cool.
Just more of the promises. And COVID hit. And we were like, we will not be side-railed by this.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely not. Because everybody was doing home concerts anyway, so we said, okay. We went to CMT and said, let's just make it be an online television special. Why not?
Wow.
So I got to put a new hat on. I became a TV producer and for online. And we did that the last 2 years. Last year's looked like a country award show. It was beautiful.
Wow.
This year, we haven't announced it yet, but I don't care. We'll announce it right now. The Concert for Love and Acceptance comes home for Christmas this next year. So will be a December Christmas special because we wanted to do something different. It'll be a live show that's taped for Christmas with some incredible guest stars. And we just have refused to be held back. We have moved forward because we felt it so important to show these kids that we are standing up for out there what the human spirit can do, and you don't have to sit down, man. You don't have to sit down to anything. It may feel like it and look like it, but I'm going to say it. You can change your ending. You can absolutely. There's always if somebody's pulling you backwards, look forward because there's a hand to pull you up, and it's just it's been a miracle for me to be able to raise all this money to get kids off the streets, to help LGBTQ families, to our mission statement is strong. So
the foundation goes to basically raise money and support these different, basically partners with these different organizations to help contribute and fund them as well.
Yeah, we always partner every year with, like last year we partnered with Oasis, and then the Trevor Project, and we name a beneficiary every year. And I think we're going to have three or four. And we also give away scholarships. We give away scholarships to LGBTQ kids. You know, it's a $5,000 scholarship. You know, we give away two of them.
That's
this year,
awesome.
I think we're going to try to give away three. And just really cool things that we get to do that that I never thought in a million years with everything, all the tar and muck that buried me alive, that I would ever be free enough to do. And I just can't believe it sometimes. You know, if I told my mom the other day, you know, I'm Southern, I'm a mom's boy, like, you know, she is just something else. She's so wise and strong. But I told her that, I said, you know, if I left this earth tomorrow, I am so extremely proud of what the community, God, friends, family have given me. And that's just an opportunity to at last stand up and be the man that I am and look in the mirror and say, hey, bud, I love you. I know it's been a long journey here, but you know what? You're okay. And you're going to be okay for the next 24 hours if you do one little thing, stay sober.
And I love that. I'm going to tell you something you didn't know. So before you and I, long before you and I met, so you came out in, what was it, 2014?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So
I think, yeah, for 2014.
Yeah. I got sober in 2011 and didn't come out till, I think it was a year after that to my, you know, close community and slowly further and further, more people knew. But it took some time, like many people, for me to really embrace that. And, in my early years of, coming out and into my own, embracing my sexuality, I remember seeing you here in Nashville and, you know, developing the foundation and doing things publicly, using your platform to say, this is who I am. It's okay. And if this is who you are too, that's awesome.
Wow.
What's cool about that for me is I would see some people like that from LA, from movies, from whatever. Being in Nashville, being in the South, growing up in a church like we did, yeah. You know, I regularly had messages like that reinforced, that it was not okay to be in my own skin,
right.
And who, you know, that it was a choice and that it was all of these things that, you know, and, you had an influence on me that you didn't have when we didn't know each other. So you didn't know you had that influence, but it meant something. And I can't help but wonder, how many other, men or people in general, especially in Nashville or in our realm, that had an impact on, because in our area, you were one of the few people that I could identify with that was out with a platform, you know, that was mainstream. You know, somebody being mainstream to use their platform, especially that day and age, even though we're not talking about that long ago, it made a difference in my life. So I just wanted to say that, I just wanted to share that with you.
I'm humbled. Believe me, I'm surprised I made it through this whole interview without crying yet. Cause you know, I didn't cry for, I think we talked about this, went to lunch that day. I think I cried a lot at lunch, didn't I?
Yeah. That's
I couldn't good. Get stories out, man. It's okay. I think, I hear you say things like that. It just makes my heart, happy that divine timing.
Yep.
Divine intervention. Oh my gosh. I was in the studio today and I had the beautiful Emily West singing a song on a new album called Fighting With Me. Mm-hmm. And I think this conversation, you and I can do a lifeline to each other and so many out there. When we finally get to come home to a version of ourselves we recognize.
Yeah.
And you just lay down that fight. And that's when joy gets to move in. You know, that's when the promises start happening. And that's when you get motivated about your own life. And man, I met you and I met your husband the other night and in a celebration of 11 years sober for you, which was amazing.
Heck yeah.
I haven't been invited to a sober party in a while to celebrate. So I thought that was cool.
It was. I was glad that you were there.
Yeah. So just all this amazing folks that are showing up. You know, we've all been through a really tough time, man. I know you're speaking to everybody tuning in out there. We all have our own stories and they're unique. And don't be afraid to tell them. Mm-hmm. Because I felt for a minute there that I felt like with everything going on in the world, with people, you know, my neighbor, you know, in the music business, I watched him tow his car off, you know, and then I watched him, you know, and I just saw a lot of things happening that
I
couldn't do anything about.
Right.
And, oops, my hour's up for the, did you hear that click? You taught me how to put Do Not Disturb on. So I should have gone longer. Anyhow. And it was Mom. That's awesome. So anyhow,
she had her own. What's that called when somebody can't? Somebody comes on a cameo on our show. So
she did, yeah. Man. She's got her own ESPN going on.
Yep.
There we go. We've all been through a lot, and I've said this many times. Everybody's story is unique, and if it's causing you pain or causing you to have to tar and feather yourself, please, you know, speak out. And there's another song we just finished up in called Lean In. And I say, this is so important. Please check on your neighbor. Please check on people if they're quiet. Because in that quietness, people have started to feel like they don't have a voice right now, and check on them. So, I mean, I probably have annoyed the heck out of my neighbors in the last 15 months around here. It's like, everybody okay? You know, you good? So,
but isn't that so great? One of the gifts that recovery gives us is, I can't remember it was a social worker or someone who coined this phrase first, and then we all copied it because it's so good and it's true that connection is the opposite of, that sickness and addiction and disease, it's the opposite of connection. When we find connection, we find healing.
Yes.
And so, you know, when we get sober and we start to recover, we find so much more connection and real connection.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm a happy camper these days. I'm a recovered brain. I'm also, I find myself being a better businessman. I find myself because I found out that, in brain mapping that, the things that I was good at and the things I wasn't so good at. So I had an opportunity to start working on the things that needed some help, you know? All that to say, guys, you know, there's so much available to you in recovery and just don't be afraid to ask and to seek answers because, I had a kid say to me the other day, he goes, well, I'm, you know, recovering drug addict. I don't, you know, what, like, why does anybody want to help me? I'm like, dude, this is the time people really want to help you. Yeah, this is a time to be very selfish. This is a time to ask for help. And it's one of the miracles of the program. You know, I know we're running a little long on time here. So I want to say that it's cool to see the country waking back up and everybody taking care of their neighbors and still being cautious. And I think we've had, my pastor said the other day, it's kind of been a little bit of a whitewash that, a car wash, not a whitewash. I like color. I don't want everything to be white. that we have an opportunity to, how'd she say this? Change the art on the wall. I thought that was beautiful. Mm. Yeah. So what are you going to hang on your wall now? So I know what I'm going to name.
Love it. Love it. It reminds me of, and I'm going to butcher this metaphor, but the old adage of, you know, whenever there's loss, we never want to not avoid grieving that. We never want to avoid acknowledging it. But there's also the process, once we've acknowledged it, once we've grieved it and what have you, that we recognize that the loss creates space for newness.
Yes.
Right?
Rebirth.
And so,
for sure.
Rebirth. And I think we're seeing a lot of that. And I think we get to look at that as well. You hit the nail on the head. I just wanted to loop back to this kind of as one of our closing thoughts. When you talked about the isolation, we all were recommended to isolate for the last however long, right? Because of the pandemic. And,
a kind word.
Yeah. And that age old term we hear, especially in the rooms of 12-step, that wherever you go, there you are, right? And like you were mentioning, a lot of us found ourselves for the first time.
Yeah.
And it was like, whoa, who are you? what do I do with this?
And for musicians out there like myself, who's on the road so much, I like you're also my family was forced to get to know me too. I was home a lot and they still liked me. So it was all right.
That's good. It sounds like you've got such a great family. But you know, I think it's really cool. I'm excited to watch our recovery community, the world in general, our country rebuild and reconnect, but especially the recovery community. You know, we're all going back to meetings. I think most of us are going back to meetings in person now you know, making those rebuilding and making new connections. A lot of us, a lot of us, our brothers and sisters, got sober during the pandemic. So making physical connections for the first time. So, it's a beautiful thing.
I'm like closing up with you and going to my home meeting right now.
I love it.
Yeah.
So I love it.
I am. But wait a minute, Patrick.
Yes.
I'm just being all kind of everybody. I want you to, dream big.
Very cool.
Dream big. So I pulled my neon sign off the wall just for you. There we go.
Love that, man. All right. Closing thought. Want to ask you for that person still struggling. What do you want to leave with them? The last word of encouragement.
You are not alone. Say this all the time. Addiction you can feel so this big in a room that's just dark. And man, make a call. You're not alone. And you can have the most amazing life. And don't be ashamed of it. Wear it, build your town, and make sure you get some good folks to help you haul some bricks. That's what I have to say about it.
Love it. Awesome. You heard it right here from Ty Herndon. Thank you so much for being with us today.
For more information on today's episode, check out the show notes. Recovery Stories is brought to you by Promises Behavioral Health's Rooted Alumni Community. If you or a loved one are struggling, have questions, or ready to take the next step, call our admission center at 888-648-4098 or visit us online at www.promisesbehavioralhealth.com. Our team is ready and waiting to answer the call for help. Whether you're watching on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, or listening on Spotify or Apple Podcasts, please share with your friends. Follow, subscribe, and leave us a review. We are grateful for you and hope that you have been encouraged by today's episode. As always, remember you are only one decision away from a completely different life, and it is never too late to start loving yourself.